what else she had magically stuffed inside there. Mother Goose took a seat in the rocking chair and kicked off her boots. Her feet were surprisingly small for someone who wore such big shoes.
Zanny, would you light this thing for me, please?
Mother Goose asked and nodded to the fireplace. Xanthus reluctantly flicked a hand in its direction. A ball of fire shot out of his index finger and onto the log in the fireplace.
Thank you, Zanny, Mother Goose said. I suppose I can't convince either of you to rub my feet.
Connor and Xanthus just stared at her with a look that said, definitely not. Mother Goose shrugged.
Sorry I asked, she said.
Alex returned from feeding Lester and joined her brother. Another bright flash filled the room. This time there was no envelope, but a white door appeared in the middle of the room. Alex and Connor eyed each other, knowing that it led to the fairy tale world. They were tempted to make a run for it, but knew they'd be stopped if they did.
That'll be for us, Xanthus said to Lambton.
Are you sure you can handle this, Mother Goose? I've been keeping the soldiers on a tight regimen. Two of them must be on guard in the house at all times, while the rest rotate resting and guarding the outside of the house.
Yeah, I know the drill, Mother Goose said, rocking in her chair. This isn't my first rodeo, Zanny. I've been doing lockdown since you were just a little matchstick. I'll keep the munchkin safe, don't worry.
Very well, Xanthus said, in a disgruntled tone. His flames flickered faster than ever.
Come along, Sir Lambton.
The dog ran over to the door.
Goodbye, children, Sir Lambton said. Please stay safe. I hope to see you soon.
Xanthus opened the door for Lambton, and he ran through it. Xanthus stepped inside, but looked back at the twins before closing it.
Respect your grandmother's wishes, he said, and closed the door behind him.
The door vanished, and the twins felt more despondent than ever. Mother Goose waited until they were gone and then began digging around in her basket.
Where did I put my bubbly? She asked herself.
Her entire arm was inside the basket searching for it.
Here it is, she said,
and withdrew a large metal thermos. She took a giant swig of it and let out a satisfied,
ah.
Alex and Connor looked at each other out of the corners of their eyes, and slight smirks appeared on their faces.
What are you two smirking at? Mother Goose asked them.
Nothing, Alex said, and dropped her smile.
You're just not what we expected, Connor said, and his smile grew twice as large. And what's that supposed to mean?
Mother Goose asked, with a raised eyebrow. Connor shrugged.
I sort of always expected you to be, well, a giant goose in a bonnet, reading nursery rhymes to small children, he said. That's a common misconception, Mother Goose said, and took another swig of her thermos. Sometimes Lester likes to dress up in my bonnets. It makes him feel fancy, but it messes with my image. Don't look at me like that, Lester. Don't do it if you don't want people talking about it.
Lester was staring in at her through the window from the backyard. His bill was wide open and his eyes were squinting. Then he made himself comfortable in the grass and went to sleep, embarrassed enough for one day.
He's so sensitive, Mother Goose said.
Where'd you find a giant goose? Alex asked.
I've had him for years, Mother Goose said. I was gambling with a couple of ogres in the dwarf forest and won a giant golden egg in a game of cards. I was so excited, thought I was rich. You can only imagine my disappointment when he hatched out of it the next day.
Wow, Connor said. He didn't know what was more interesting, the fact that Lester hatched out of a golden egg or that Mother Goose was a gambler.
Oh well, Mother Goose said, and took another swig of bubbly. I've put him to work over the years. He's been my main source of transportation. I hate flying commercial planes. I get too seasick to travel on ships, and my driver's license has been suspended for years.
The more she drank, the heavier her eyes became, and the looser her neck seemed to become, because her head began to swivel. She held the thermos up to the twins.
Forgive me, did you want some? She asked.
I don't think we're legally allowed to have whatever's in there, Alex said.
Suit yourself, Mother Goose said.
Alex was starting to have serious reservations about her. Connor stared up at her in awe. She was gradually becoming his favorite fairy tale character ever. He looked inside her basket.
What else is in there? Connor asked. Are those passports?
Mother Goose quickly shut the lid of her basket and stared at him. He let out an apologetic laugh.
Sorry, he said. I didn't mean to invade your privacy. Just wondering why you have so many. Look, kids, she said, peeved. When you've lived as long as I have, and have traveled as much as I do, you make some enemies along the way. I'm not like your grandmother. I don't get along with everyone. Some cultures and countries that I'll refrain from naming don't appreciate a strongly opinionated dame such as myself.
Mother Goose nodded confidently to herself and took another swig. Alex and Connor nodded along with her, afraid to disagree.
Always have a plan B and a friend with bail, and you're guaranteed to never fail, Mother Goose said, and took another drink. That's my motto. Her words were starting to slur, and her eyes began to flutter as they grew heavier. "Where were you in Europe?" Alex asked, desperately trying to change the subject.
"I was at a children's hospital in Romania, then stopped by an orphanage in Albania," Mother Goose said.
The twins looked at each other to see if the other had noticed, but she seemed to be rhyming the more she drank.
"What stories did you read to them?" Connor asked, stopping her from slipping into unconsciousness. He was so amused he didn't want it to end.
"I read them Jack and Jill, Little Miss Muffet, the usual. They were a tough crowd. Thought I was delusional."
She yawned, but kept her eyes open, excited by the new topic.
"Muffet can be a bit of a diva, but she can't help her severe arachnophobia."
There was no denying it. Mother Goose was in full rhyming mode.
"Cool," Connor laughed. "What about Jack and Jill? I've always wondered what they were really doing on that hill."
Alex elbowed him. Mother Goose sat up in her rocking chair. Connor knew whatever she was about to tell them was going to be good. Alex wasn't sure if she wanted to hear it.
"Jack and Jill went up that hill for a supposed pail of water," Mother Goose said. "Jack fell down, broke his crown, 'cause Jill pushed him, but no one caught her."
"No way,"
Connor said with an intrigued smile. Mother Goose bobbed her head up and down, sloppily nodding.
"Why did Jill push Jack down the hill?" Alex asked.
Mother Goose chuckled to herself.
"Jack is nimble, Jack is quick, but Jack can be such a..."
She stopped herself from finishing the thought, perhaps remembering she was talking to 13-year-olds.
"I think I've had enough bubbly for one night. It's time for bed anyway."
Mother Goose put her thermos in her basket and shooed the twins off. Her head touched her chest, her eyes closed, and she fell into a deep sleep in her rocking chair. She snored like a grizzly bear.
"I like her," Connor said with a goofy grin, climbing up the stairs to bed.
"She's quite the gossip, isn't she?" Alex said.
"Sure is," he said.
"And she really lets loose after a few sips of whatever she was drinking." Alex paused halfway up the staircase and looked back at their sleeping caretaker.
"Yeah, she certainly does."
She began forming a plan in her head. Alex tossed and turned all night long, having the worst nightmare of her life. It started off as the same dream she had been having for months. She and her brother ran happily through the woods, only to be kept outside of their grandmother's cottage. However, this time when they peered through the window, they didn't see their grandmother, but their mother. She was crying and whispered, "Help me," over and over until Alex woke up. Alex was shaky and sweaty and began crying. For all she knew, it wasn't just a dream. Her mother could be in serious danger or seriously hurt. Alex couldn't live like this anymore. She needed to find out what was going on by any means possible. Later, when the rest of the house had woken, Alex went downstairs and found Connor, Mother Goose, and Bob having breakfast.
"Good morning," Bob said. "How'd you sleep?"
"I didn't," Alex said.
"Sounds like we had similar nights," Connor said, looking at her with bags under his own eyes. "I'll pour you some cereal," Mother Goose said.
She went into the kitchen and poured milk and cereal from a box of Mother Goose grits. A cartoon illustration of a much happier and smiling Mother Goose was displayed on the box. She placed the bowl of cereal in front of Alex.
"Goose grits?" she asked. "Should I ask?"
"Don't judge me," Mother Goose said. "I usually hate the depictions of me in this world. They're normally so degrading. But I tried having an open mind about the cereal when they came out with it, and I've been addicted ever since."
Alex shrugged and took a bite. It wasn't half bad. "Mother Goose was just explaining to Bob all about the fairy tale world," Connor said.
"Fascinating stuff," Bob said.
He was eager to continue their conversation.
"Correct me if I'm wrong, but you and the other fairies have been around for hundreds of years, traveling between worlds, telling stories to children in need."
"That's it in a golden eggshell," Mother Goose said.
"So you must be thousands of years old," Bob said.
Mother Goose shot him a dirty look.
"Hold your horses there, cowboy," she said. "Don't get me wrong, I'm older than dirt, but I'm not as old as you think. This world used to run much faster than ours. You've had so many different eras and periods. The Middle Ages, the Renaissance, the Enlightenment, the Industrial Age, and now the Modern Age. We've only had three or so that I can recall."
"What were they?"
Alex asked, keen on learning a bit of the fairy tale world's history.
"Let me think," Mother Goose said. "We had the Dragon Age, the Age of Magic, and we're currently in the Golden Age. Well, it used to be the Golden Age until all this drama happened."
"The Dragon Age?" Connor asked excitedly. "You mean there were dragons in the fairy tale world?"
"Tons of them," Mother Goose said.
It was a mess. Disasters and barbecues left and right. They're extinct now. Kind of like your dinosaurs.
Did you ever see one? Connor asked.
I used to wrestle them. Long before I took up magic and storytelling, Mother Goose said, with a boastful smile.
Connor squinted at her. Are you pulling my leg? He asked. Mother Goose rolled up her sleeve and showed Connor a large burn mark on her forearm.
This isn't from cooking, kid, she said.
Connor just stared at her with an open mouth. He had never been so impressed by someone in his entire life, and Mother Goose milked the admiration for all it was worth.
You were around for the Middle Ages and the Renaissance? Alex asked. You must have seen so many people and places.
I started the Renaissance, honey, Mother Goose said, like it was a tea party she had thrown.
The twins felt they were both being led on now.
I did, Mother Goose said. It was just me, your grandmother, Rosette, Skyline, and Violetta back then. We were so bored in the human world that one night I threw a big party. We had a great time. Next thing I know, we come back a few decades later and all of Europe had copied us.
Our grandma was there? Connor asked.
Oh, yeah, Mother Goose said. She was a lot of fun back then. After she had your father, she became so motherly. That's how she got her title, the fairy godmother, from being so sweet and maternal to everyone.
Alex and Connor exchanged a look. However upset they were with her grandmother, she still became more amazing the more they learned about her.
You know, Mother Goose continued, Leonardo da Vinci and I had a bit of a fling.
Alex gasped. I don't believe you. Now you're making things up. Mother Goose rolled her eyes and looked directly into Alex's, serious as can be.
Why do you think he tried building that flying machine? He was trying to keep up with me and Lester. Hey, Lester, tell these kids I dated Leonardo. They don't believe me.
Lester appeared at the kitchen window. He nodded, confirming the news for the twins. They were astonished.
Of course, I didn't go by Mother Goose back then, she said. My code name was Mona Lisa.
You're the Mona Lisa? Connor asked. The famous painting? Alex asked.
Why do teenagers always think people are lying to them? I've got no reason to be dishonest with you, Mother Goose told him. Leo, as I used to call him, made me laugh, but that's apparent in my portrait.
Alex and Connor glared at her with their mouths hanging open. They didn't know what to believe anymore.
Why did you have to have a code name? Connor asked. I told you, I've got enemies, Mother Goose said. I've had several aliases over the years. Guinevere, Mona Lisa, Lady Godiva, the Goose Flu, those are all me. But now I simply go by Mother Goose. It fits me the best.
Bob was just as bewildered as the twins were. There he sat, a man of education and science, slowly losing faith in everything he thought he knew.
So you and the fairies have been spreading the same fairy tales all this time? Bob asked.
We spread them as they happen, Mother Goose said. Our more recent histories had the biggest impact on this world. The stories of Sleeping Beauty, Snow White, Cinderella, blah, blah, blah. That's why we call it the Golden Age. Unfortunately, the more this world began to develop, the faster it seemed to go by in comparison to our world. We were afraid the stories would get lost over time, so we recruited a few people in this world to help us.
Like the Brothers Grimm, Bob asked, starting to understand.
The Brothers Grimm, Hans Christian Andersen, Walt Disney, Mother Goose listed. But we stopped recruiting protégés and mostly do it ourselves these days. There isn't a time difference to be worried about anymore. And things became so calm in our world after the Happily Ever After Assembly was formed, we needed something to do.
The Happily Ever After Assembly? Bob asked. It's sort of like their United Nations, Alex said. All the kings and queens signed a treaty to regulate peace.
All the kings and queens, the fairy godmother, the fairy council, and I make up the assembly. We've watched over the treaty since it was created, Mother Goose said. It's been working out really well. Our world has stayed pretty peaceful. Well, until now, that is.
Mother Goose eyed the twins. She had been told she wasn't supposed to bring up the current situation. Bob nodded slightly.
I think I'm starting to understand it all, he said. Except one thing. You said there was a time difference between the worlds. What happened?
Mother Goose gestured to the twins.
These two showed up, she said with a smile. They were the first children born of both worlds and somehow linked them together. Magic works in mysterious ways. Always has.
Bob looked over at the twins with an impressed grin on his face.
We're kind of a big deal, Connor said.
Bob smiled at him. Well, you think you know someone, right, guys? He said with a wink. Bob left for work within the hour, and the twins began another day of moping around the house with only their worries to entertain themselves with. They had grown very tired of the same concerns rotating in their heads. The next couple days weren't as tense as the last week had been. Mother Goose wasn't as strict as Xanthus, and it was a huge relief for the twins.
The soldiers had to wake her in the middle of her naps to remind her of the gnoming shifts. Alex's spirits were raised by seeing how much Connor bonded with Mother Goose. The two became practically inseparable. During the day, they would sit at the window looking at the front of the house and play pranks on the mailman. Mother Goose would wiggle an ear and magically move the mailbox whenever he would turn his back. After dinner, if they weren't watching professional wrestling, Mother Goose and Connor would play cards with the soldiers. She even taught him how to hide an ace in his sleeve. Alex didn't fill him in on the plan that had been forming in her head for days. She already felt guilty enough breaking her grandmother's wishes alone. She didn't want to drag her brother into it. One night, Connor went to bed early, and Alex stayed up, keeping an eye on Mother Goose. She was sitting at the kitchen table, thermos in hand, reminiscing about the fairy tale world with the soldiers. Alex could tell she was having a little too much fun, because her eyes were glazed over and she was slurring and rhyming her words.
"I haven't had this much fun since I was very young, and used to rub-a-dub-dub with the three men in the tub."
Mother Goose laughed and passed her thermos around the table. The soldiers each took a long swig, and their eyes began to droop too, as time went by.
"Mother Goose, may I confess something to you?" one of the soldiers said sadly. "I was one of the king's men who tried to put Humpty Dumpty back together again. I know you were very close. I'm so sorry we couldn't help him."
Mother Goose's eyes filled with tears as she was reminded of her late friend and the night he had had his tragic accident.
"Humpty and I sat on that wall. Humpty and I had such a ball," she said. "Humpty had a fall right there and right then because poor Humpty couldn't hold his gin. I missed that egg so much."
Mother Goose buried her face into her hands and cried drunken tears for a few minutes. She woke a few moments later, collected her thermos, and took a seat in her rocking chair by the fireplace. She snapped her fingers and a fire appeared in the fireplace. She went to take one last swig from her thermos, but was disappointed to discover she and the soldiers had drunk it all. This was the moment Alex had been waiting for. She snuck into the kitchen and retrieved the bottle of champagne that Bob had brought the night of the proposal. Alex hoped she could put it to good use tonight. Mother Goose began to doze off again in her rocking chair when she was startled by a loud pop. Alex opened the champagne bottle right behind her. "Care for a refill?" Alex asked, and gestured to the empty thermos Mother Goose held in a tight grip.
"Oh, that's very kind," Mother Goose said, a little discombobulated.
She held up her thermos, and Alex filled it all the way to the top and set the champagne bottle aside.
"You've got a heavy pour. You're my kind of girl," Mother Goose said, and took her first sip. "This is good stuff. Are you sure it isn't being saved for anything special?"
"Bob was saving it for when he was going to propose to my mom, but that all went out the window when she was kidnapped," Alex said restlessly, and took a seat on the floor next to Mother Goose's chair.
"Kids as good as the two of you shouldn't go through what you've been through,"
Mother Goose said sadly, and lovingly stroked Alex's hair. Her eyes were sad, but grew heavier and glassier with every swig of the thermos she took. Alex almost had her where she wanted her. Almost. "Connor and I have been through so much together, and we've always been capable of handling anything that came our way," Alex said. "So you can imagine why it's so frustrating not knowing anything. It doesn't matter how fast we had to grow up. We're still being treated like children." A loud snoring sound came from Mother Goose. She had dozed off. Alex tapped her until she was awake again.
"Hmm?"
Mother Goose said with one eye open.
What were you saying, honey?"
Alex thought fast. Mother Goose was somewhere between consciousness and dreamland, and Alex wanted to take full advantage of it.
"You were just telling me about how bad it is in the fairy tale world," Alex said, nodding her head a little too convincingly.
Mother Goose bobbed her head up and down.
"Things are bad to say the very least. Vines and thorn bush still cover the east,"
she said, and then looked around in a daze.
"I think I've had too much bubbly. The room is spinning."
"That's terrible,"
Alex said, and immediately refilled Mother Goose's thermos.
"But surely the happily ever after assembly can handle vines and thorn bushes, right?"
Alex pushed thermos in her direction. Mother Goose took another sip from it.
"The vines and thorns are not what's awful. It's the magic behind them that's so darn powerful," Mother Goose said. "They tried finding her before she struck. We ran out of time and out of luck."
Her head fell to her chest and she dozed off again. Alex shook her awake. It was more difficult this time.
"I'm sorry, dear. I don't mean to keep falling asleep in the middle of your sentences,"
Mother Goose said. She was practically cross-eyed from exhaustion.
"What were you saying?"
Alex thought quickly again.
"I was just saying I hope you find her, whoever you're looking for," she said.
Mother Goose nodded. She gently touched the side of Alex's face.
"Don't fret on the idea. They'll soon find Esmea, Mother Goose said.
Alex had never heard the name before. Esmea? She asked. Who was Esmea? Mother Goose's eyes grew twice in size. If she hadn't been so intoxicated, she would have sat straight up in her seat. Alex knew that this was some of the information that was supposed to be kept from her and her brother.
Oh, dear, Mother Goose said and hiccuped. Please don't tell your grandmother what I've said.
I won't, I swear, Alex said. Mother Goose slumped with relief. As long as you tell me who she is, Alex added. Mother Goose tensed up as much as she could with all the bubbly in her system.
I can't. I promised your grandmother that I wouldn't say a word, she said.
Then don't say it. Rhyme it, Alex said. She stood up and looked closely into Mother Goose's eyes, more desperate for information than ever. I'm going to find out eventually. It's only a matter of time. So please, just tell me, who is Esmea?
Mother Goose looked around the house to make sure they were alone and took one final swig from her thermos. She looked away from Alex and into the fire, not wanting to make eye contact with Alex while she gave up the information she had sworn not to give.
For years, the world presumed she was dead. Her whereabouts were unknown and left unsaid. In the shadows she stayed, quietly plotting. A vengeful wrath she planned on igniting. Driven by rage and centuries of sorrows, a suppressed fear shall be tomorrow's. After failing to curse a princess's death, she's now set her sights on the world's last breath. Happily ever after will be a thing of the past, for the evil enchantress has returned at last.
Mother Goose closed her eyes, not from fatigue this time, but from shame. Alex had hung on to every word.
The enchantress? Alex asked, putting together the pieces of her rhyme. The evil enchantress who tried killing Sleeping Beauty is back?
Yes, Mother Goose said. Her name is Esmea, and she has your mother.
Her chin fell on her chest, and she went to the deepest sleep Alex had ever seen. Her snores filled the silent house. Alex's eyes darted around the room. Her heart was racing. She had to catch her breath, because learning this information knocked the wind out of her. It was as if Alex's brain had switched to autopilot. She immediately ran up the stairs and into her bedroom. She dumped all the school books and supplies out of her backpack and piled in as many clothes as she could fit. She threw a sweater over her head and put on her running shoes. Alex ran down the stairs and into the kitchen. She stocked all the food and necessities she knew she would need on a long trip. Knives, matches, water bottles, etc. She wasn't even that careful passing by the soldiers who were passed out at the table. Even if she was caught making a run for it, she was so determined she didn't think anyone or anything could stop her. She went out the front door and steered her bike off the porch and into the street. She glanced back at all the gnomes, and while they remained completely still, she knew the soldiers inside were anything but.
I know you can't stop me, because I'm not in any danger, Alex called out to the gnomes.
Yet, she said under her breath.
She pedaled off into the night as fast as she could, knowing it'd only be a matter of time before one of the soldiers or Mother Goose came after her. Alex didn't have much of a plan, but she knew where she was headed. She was going to her grandmother's cottage in the mountains. The trips her family used to take when she and her brother were small to visit their grandmother always took a couple hours by car, so she knew she had a long journey ahead of her by bike. But if there was any place she would find something of her grandmother's to set off or turn on that gave her an entrance into the fairy tale world, she knew it would be there. Alex took one final look back at her house before it disappeared. A little voice inside her head told her it would be a long time before she saw it again, but she welcomed the feeling. She didn't care what her grandmother's wishes were. Alex was going to find a way into the land of stories and save her mom, even if she died trying.
Chapter 8. The Cottage.
Alex woke up in a grassy field the next afternoon. She looked around and grunted to herself. She had been riding her bike all night and had just stopped to rest for a moment off the road. Clearly, that moment had lasted a few hours longer than she'd planned. She was in the foothills leading up to the mountains where her grandmother's cottage was. It had been a great while since the last time she and her brother had gone, so it was difficult remembering the exact directions. As the foothills slowly rose into mountain terrain, she stopped at a tiny gas station and purchased a map. Navigating became harder as the roads wound and forked up into the mountains. She glanced back and forth at the map as she continued, making sure she was traveling northeast. She remembered her parents used to drive northeast until there was no more roads to take. Alex felt guilty for leaving her brother at home, but hadn't wanted to drag him into her spontaneous plan.
Although, when night fell and Alex was forced to set up a small camp off the road by herself, she really wished her brother was there, keeping her company. She couldn't make up her mind if it was more dangerous to be traveling in the woods of the fairy tale world or her world. Even though there were no big bad wolves to be worried about, she was sure there were still regular wolves around. But if she couldn't handle a simple wolf now, how was she going to take down a powerful enchantress when she found her? She doubted swinging a big stick would scare off the woman who'd cursed an entire kingdom for 100 years. The more she thought about it, the less it made sense. What did this Esmia woman want with her mother anyway? How did she even get to her mom in the first place? If the fairies couldn't find her or her mother, what made Alex think she could? Alex and her brother knew more about the enchantress than the others gave them credit for. During their encounter with the evil queen, they discovered that the enchantress had kidnapped the evil queen when she was a girl and used her in a scheme to take over the fairy tale world. Alex lay on the ground, using her backpack as a pillow, and let her troubled thoughts wander until she finally fell asleep. Alex was back on her bike before sunrise the next day. She biked across windy road after windy road until the middle of the afternoon. She jolted forward and almost fell off her bike when her front tire hit a particularly sharp rock and went flat. "You've got to be kidding me," she said, and angrily tossed her useless bike to the side of the road. She would have to travel by foot for the rest of her journey, however long that would be. Her spirits rose an hour or so afterward when she saw a wooden bridge on the road ahead. When Alex and Connor were younger, seeing this bridge meant they were almost at their grandmother's house. Alex knew she was close. She jogged toward the bridge in relief, but the closer she got, the less familiar it appeared. It seemed so small compared to the one in her memories. Was it just because she was so much smaller then? Also disheartening was how decrepit the bridge appeared to be. Every piece of wood was chipped and rotting like crazy. Alex took a couple of steps onto the bridge and examined it closer. It didn't feel right. A car could never fit on the bridge. She looked over the side. Several hundred feet below was a dry and rocky riverbed. The bridge her and her family used to drive over was only a few feet higher than the stream that ran under it. Alex sighed. She was lost. She turned on her heels and started to head back when she heard a sudden crack. Before she could tell where the sound was coming from, Alex fell straight through the bridge, rotten wood splitting under her feet. She screamed and grabbed hold of the bridge. She desperately tried pulling herself up, but it was no use. She could hear the wood cracking from the pressure. "Help!" Alex screamed. "Somebody help me!" Alex didn't know who she was yelling to. As far as she knew, she was alone in the mountains, and she was about to fall to her death. "No, no, no!" Alex said to herself. "It can't end like this! It can't end like this!" She struggled to pull herself up again. Another loud crack sounded, and she slipped further through the bridge and toward the rocky ground below. Alex felt two hands grab hers just in the nick of time. She looked up and saw a very familiar face looking down at her. At first, she thought it was her dad, but then realized it was Connor. It was a strange moment to notice how much he had grown up. His face turned bright red as he struggled to hold his sister with all his might. "Now, Lester, pull us up, buddy," he grunted. Connor and Alex were slowly dragged upward. Once Alex was above the bridge again, she could see Lester's bill tightly clutching Connor's pants, dragging him up while he dragged her. The giant goose pulled them across the bridge until they were safely on solid ground again. The twins and Lester stayed on the ground until they all caught their breath.
"I hate you so much right now," Connor said between heavy pants.
"That's funny, because I've never loved you more," Alex said with a big smile and rolled over to give her brother a big hug. "Thank you. I owe you one."
"Luckily, with the amount of trouble we get ourselves into, I know you'll have a chance to make it up to me," he said.
Lester squawked at them, as if to say, "Don't worry about me, I'm fine."
"She owes you one too, Lester, don't worry," Connor said.
The twins stood up and brushed themselves off. They were covered in splinters and chips of rotting wood. Lester got to his feet too, and stretched out his neck and bill.
"How did you know where I was?" Alex asked.
"Lucky guess," Connor said.
"You can't even run away like a normal teenager. You're supposed to leave a note. There was only one place I figured you were going. Lester and I had been flying around looking for you all day when we finally spotted your bike down the road."
"Does Mother Goose know where I am?" Alex asked.
"I've been covering for you since I realized you were gone. I told Mother Goose you were sick and were vomiting all over your room. Then, when she wasn't looking, I hijacked her goose and came looking for you," Connor said.
"How did you manage that one?" Alex asked.
"Well, apparently he feels taken for granted and thought by helping me it would teach Mother Goose a lesson," Connor said. "I don't speak goose or anything, but I'm guessing that's the gist of it, right, boy?"
Connor turned to Lester, and the giant goose nodded.
Why didn't you take me with you? He asked angrily. How could you leave me locked up at home? Are you trying to do things solo now or something? Not cool, Alex.
Alex lowered her head shamefully.
Because Graham's going to be mad enough at me when she finds out I took off. I didn't want to drag you into it, she said. And I found out who has Mom. I pried it out of Mother Goose.
So that's why you took off so abruptly? Connor said.
Well, who has her? What did you learn?
Alex now understood why her grandmother had kept information from them. She felt horrible knowing she was about to make her brother as stressed as she was.
Apparently, the Enchantress is back, Alex told him. The Enchantress who cursed Sleeping Beauty is terrorizing the fairy tale world again, and she has Mom.
What?
He said in disbelief. What does the Enchantress want with Mom?
I don't know, Alex said. I've been trying to figure it out, and I can't think of anything.
Wait, I thought the Enchantress was dead, Connor said. The Evil Queen told us that she poisoned her and she ran off and died. Remember?
I guess she was wrong, Alex said. Esme is her name, and she's very much alive.
And that's why we hadn't seen Grandma in so long, Connor said.
I suppose, Alex said. Connor paced around the mountain road, thinking.
We've got to get into the fairy tale world, Connor said. We have to save Mom.
I agree, but what are we going to do when we get there? What can we do to save her that the fairies can't? Alex asked.
We may not be able to do anything, Connor said.
But two more people trying couldn't hurt. Besides, it sure beats sitting around and waiting for bad news.
A small smile appeared on Alex's face. She couldn't have agreed more.
Let's try to get to Grandma's cottage before sundown, Alex said. Do you know where we are? Are we even close?
Connor looked around at the mountains surrounding them.
Yeah, we're close, he said, and then pointed to a flat mountain peak in the distance. Grandma's cottage is just on the other side of that mountain peak. I remember seeing it when we were little and hoping it was a volcano.
Are you sure? Alex asked.
Positive, Connor said. Let's go.
Lester, can you take us in the direction of that mountain peak?
Lester cocked his head in the direction Connor pointed, let out an exaggerated sigh, and then nodded.
Connor climbed onto Lester's back, then offered his hand to Alex.
Climb aboard, he said.
Alex hesitated.
Are you sure this is safe? She asked.
Lester squawked, rather insulted.
You've got to try this, Alex, Connor said enthusiastically. I understand why OMG travels this way.
OMG? Alex asked.
Old Mother Goose, Connor said. It's my nickname for her. She calls me Sea Dog.
Alex shrugged and took his hand. She swung a leg over the large goose and held tightly to her brother's waist.
Connor gripped the rings, ready for liftoff. Let's fly, Lester, he said.
Lester spread his wings. His wingspan was much more impressive in the daylight. He took a few steps back and then bolted into a fast waddle forward, flapping his wings as he went, and they rose higher and higher into the air.
Connor was right. It was an incredible experience. The mountains seemed much more majestic from a bird's perspective. The twins had never felt so free in their lives.
I hope no one sees us, Alex said, fearfully looking down at all the roads and tiny towns underneath them.
I just hope it isn't goose hunting season, Connor said.
Lester squawked and looked back at him, terrified.
I'm just kidding, Lester, Connor said. Relax before you lay an egg.
Lester headed in the direction of the peak. A few moments later, they were flying over it. Connor was a little disappointed to see it was in fact a flat mountaintop, and there was no sign of molten lava inside it.
Keep an eye out for the cottage, he told his sister. It should be coming up any moment now.
Alex scanned the ground below. It was hard to see anything but treetops and the occasional chimney. She saw a familiar bridge, and her eyes followed the winding road that crossed over it and through the woods ahead. At the very end of the road, she could make out the roof of a storybook cottage.
I see it, I see it, Alex said and pointed to it. It's Grandma's cottage.
Lester landed in front of the cottage just as the sun began setting. Alex and Connor climbed off the goose and observed their grandmother's old home.
Whoa, Connor said.
It's definitely not in the same condition we left it in, Alex said. It was obvious that no one had lived in the cottage for a long time. The front lawn was practically dead and overgrown in some places. The flower beds were full of weeds, and blades of grass were almost as tall as the twins. Ivy grew up the sides of the cottage, and part of the roof had caved in. Their grandmother's blue car was parked outside, but hadn't been driven in years. A layer of dirt covered it, and a city of spiderwebs had been spun between the tires. Although the cottage was used mostly as a prop, since their grandmother only lived here when the twins visited, it still was the location of the twins' happiest childhood memories. They were sad to see how abandoned it was.
Alex and Connor approached the front door apprehensively.
Lester, Bon appetit, Connor said, and gestured to the overgrown grass. Lester squawked and happily went to town on it.
Do you think it's locked? Alex asked.
Connor twisted the handle and the door creaked open, answering her question. The twins stepped inside and surveyed the interior. It was exactly how they remembered it, except dusty and covered in cobwebs. Grandma's rocking chair was still by the fireplace and faced a large rug the twins used to lie on when she read to them.
It's so strange to see everything again, Alex said. Grandma's chair, the fireplace, the kitchen table. I almost can't believe it's been here this whole time.
Do you remember the forts we used to build with Dad under that thing? Connor asked, pointing to the table.
How could I forget? Alex asked. You always tried keeping me out, but Dad never let you.
You know what's funny? Connor said as he walked around. Even though we know now that Grandma never actually lived here, whenever I picture Grandma, I always imagine her in this place, baking cookies or reading by the fireplace.
Me too, Alex said. Most of our childhood was a front, but it was a happy front.
You think we'll find something that can take us to the fairy tale world in here? Connor asked.
We have to, Alex said simply, but she had her doubts.
She wasn't sure what she was searching for, but knew she'd know what it was as soon as she saw it. Connor looked at all the dusty frames on top of the fireplace mantle. They're mostly pictures of him and his sister at birthday parties and holidays with their family. In one picture, the twins were 3 years old and sitting on Santa's lap. Connor was very chubby and had a big grin on his face. Alex was crying hysterically.
Check out this picture of us with Santa, Connor laughed. You look like he's about to eat you.
I was preparing myself for the other fictional characters that did try to eat us, Alex said. Connor snickered and picked up another photo.
No way. Look how young Mom and Dad look in this photo. I don't think we were even born yet.
Alex walked over and looked at it for herself.
Connor, we look just like them, she said. There's no denying that they're our parents.
You're right, Connor said. I came up with a whole adoption theory when I found out we were part fairy, but looking at this picture kind of tosses that out the window.
Alex went back to searching, confident something would pop up at any moment.
Have you found anything that seems portal-worthy? Connor asked her.
Not yet, Alex said. Well, except for maybe this.
Alex was staring up at a beautiful painting on the wall. She remembered it from when she was little, and unlike the rest of the cottage, the painting had remained just as vibrant. It was a watercolor painting of a pond and had beautiful shades of greens and blues. There was something about it that seemed more familiar now, as if they had been there.
You think the painting could take us into the land of stories? Connor asked.
It worked in one of the Narnia books, Alex said. She stepped closer to the painting and placed a hand on its frame.
It's the Ugly Duckling Pond, Alex said, recognizing it. This is it. This has to be our way in. Why else would Grandma hang a picture of a pond in her cottage?
You think you can get it to work? Connor said.
I can try, Alex said.
She placed both of her hands on the golden frame and tried to will it to life. Nothing happened. She closed her eyes and took a deep breath, willing it even harder. Still, nothing happened. Connor clapped his hands loudly, breaking his sister's concentration.
Clap on, he said. What are you doing?
Alex asked him. Just thinking of other ways to turn it on, he said. Is there a remote control or an on switch somewhere? Maybe it's like a plasma screen. Alex ignored him and went back to focusing. She imagined all the places and people that she had met during her first visit. She imagined all the castles and forests she and her brother had seen. She imagined all the dangerous animals and creatures they had encountered. But mostly, she thought of how desperately she wanted to see them again. Alex thought of her grandmother, her father, and her mother. She thought of the pond and the painting, the lily pads, the fireflies, and of its water. To the twins' amazement, the painting began to glow.
You did it, Connor said, and hugged his sister. You set it off.
I did?
Alex asked. It was almost too good to be true.
I did it! I did it!
The twins jumped up and down with excitement, but their excitement quickly faded into fear. The painting began to glow brighter and brighter, and the cottage began to rattle. It felt like a large train was passing directly below them.
Exactly how did the Narnia kids travel through the painting? Connor asked, slowly stepping away from theirs.
Uh-oh.
The cottage stopped shaking and the painting dimmed. Only now the painted pond was gone. The canvas was completely blank.
Huh? Alex said. That's strange.
A bit of a relief, though, Connor said. I was worried for a second that water was going to spill out of the...
Crash!
A tidal wave of water crashed through the windows by the front door. The twins screamed and ran to the back of the cottage.
Crash!
Another tidal wave came rushing toward them from the back.
Crash!
Water was gushing through every door and window and flooding the cottage.
"What is going on?" Connor yelled. "Did we hit an iceberg?"
He described it perfectly. They felt like they were sinking, and sinking fast. They were already waist-deep in water. The twins looked around in horror as their grandmother's former home was destroyed.
"What have we done?"
Alex shouted. "I've always wanted a pool, but this is ridiculous," Connor yelled. The water poured into the house faster and faster. The twins couldn't keep their feet on the floor anymore. They treaded water as it lifted them toward the ceiling.
"We've got to swim out of here or we'll drown," Connor said. "Follow me."
He took a deep breath and dove underwater. Alex was quick to follow him. They swam across the cottage to the front door. There was an extremely strong current coming through the door, so the twins had to grab hold of anything they could to force themselves against it. They pulled themselves past the front door and discovered the cottage was no longer in the mountains, but in a large, murky body of water. It sank below them and disappeared into the dark, watery depths. The twins grabbed hold of each other and swam as hard as they could to the surface, praying there would be a surface. Finally, they saw a distorted night sky above them. It was the surface. The twins surfaced in the mysterious water, gasping for air. The air was freezing against their faces.
"What was that all about?" Connor yelled.
Alex wasn't paying any attention to him. She saw large trees in the distance with giant roots that sank into the ground. Fireflies filled the air, and lily pads floated in the water around them. She knew exactly where they were.
"Connor!"
Alex said, and excitedly splashed her brother.
"We're in the Ugly Duckling Pond! We're here! We're back in the land of stories!"
Chapter 9. The Gathering in the Woods. Alex and Connor slowly crawled out of the pond. They were soaked, muddy, and covered in lily pads. They shivered in the cool night air and held themselves tightly as they looked at the land around them. The Ugly Duckling Pond was in the middle of a forest in the Northern Kingdom. The twins had passed it on their previous trip into the Land of Stories, but neither had expected to become so acquainted with it on their next visit.
"I cannot believe we just sank Grandma's house," Connor said through chattering teeth. "It takes a lot of talent to submerge something that isn't even close to water."
Bits and pieces of their grandmother's cottage were still floating in the pond. Her rocking chair bobbed up and down in the water. Alex was so amazed, she didn't even care how dirty or cold she was.
"I sure hope Grandma has really good house insurance. Alex, are you even listening to me?" Connor asked.
She turned to face him. The excitement was practically glowing in her eyes. She didn't care how they had gotten there. They were finally there, and that's all that mattered.
"We're here. We're actually here," Alex said.
Even a trembling jaw couldn't take the smile off her face. Despite the circumstances, it was the first time Alex had been happy in months.
"Congratulations. You managed to successfully and dangerously transport us into the fairy tale world. Again," Connor said, with a smile of his own. "I've got to say, I prefer Grandma's methods of transportation to yours."
Alex's smile disappeared as the reality of it set in. She surveyed the forest around the pond more closely.
"Something's wrong," she said.
"Of course something is wrong," Connor said. "Grandma's cottage is at the bottom of a pond. How are we going to explain that one to her?"
"That's not what I mean," Alex said. "Listen, do you hear that?"
Connor raised his eyebrows and looked from side to side. The pond and the forest around it were dead silent.
"I don't hear anything," Connor said.
"Exactly," Alex said. "We're standing at the edge of a pond and there are no sounds at all, no frogs or crickets or anything."
Connor nodded, understanding what she meant. It was so eerie, he was surprised he hadn't noticed it before.
"It's like everything is on mute," he said.
"Or hiding," Alex said.
Suddenly, on the other side of the pond, a dark figure emerged from the trees. It startled the twins at first, until they saw it was small, barely the size of a dog. It was running very fast on four skinny legs and had something white trailing behind it. Alex and Connor hid behind the closest tree and watched it from afar. The strange creature slowed into a fast and springy walk as it delicately approached the pond. It was wearing a dark cloak and lowered its hood with its front paws before taking a drink from the water. The moonlight reflecting off the water illuminated the mysterious visitor, and the twins could make out what it was. It had dark red fur, pointy ears, and a long, fluffy tail with a white tip.
"It's a fox," Connor whispered to Alex.
The fox jerked its head up from the water, and its bright yellow eyes stared in their direction. He must have had impeccable hearing. The twins stayed still. The fox headed for the trees, in the opposite direction from where he had come.
"Where is he going?" Alex whispered to her brother.
Do I look like an expert in cloaked mammals? Connor said.
The fox disappeared into the trees, but besides being the only living thing they had seen, there was something very intriguing about him. Neither of the twins wanted to let him out of their sights.
We should follow him, Connor said.
Why? Alex asked.
Connor shrugged. Do we have another plan we're supposed to be following? He said.
Good point, Alex said. And without another moment to waste, the twins began chasing after the small fox, hoping he would lead them to someone or something that would help them find their mother. Alex and Connor ran after the fox for a good while. He wasn't sticking to a path, so it was hard to see him between the trees ahead. He was incredibly fast for his size, too, so it was difficult to keep up with him. They were happy to run and warm their bodies, though. Their clothes began to dry the more they went.
It looks like we're going into the dwarf forest, Alex whispered as she jogged. How can you tell? Connor asked.
The trees are getting thicker, and it's getting harder to see the sky, Alex said. Also, I'm feeling more anxious the farther we run. That's the biggest clue.
Connor gulped.
The dwarf forest had never been a good place for the twins. The last time they had been in this part of the land of stories, they had been chased by wolves and kidnapped by goblins. The fox came into view ahead, and the twins came to a belated stop, like cars with bad brakes. They hid behind the biggest tree they could find, and each gestured for the other one to be quiet. The fox was standing on his hind legs next to a stone well in the middle of a clearing. The moon illuminated the clearing like a spotlight. The fox stood very still, keeping a close watch on the trees around him. He was waiting, but for what the twins couldn't tell. At one point, the fox looked directly at the twins' hiding spot, but didn't appear to see them. The twins wondered if they blended in with the rest of the forest because they were so dirty or just because it was so dark. It was unnervingly quiet in the dwarf forest, too. It was surprising, since the twins had remembered hearing all kinds of troubling sounds coming from close by and afar the last time they were here. A few twig snaps echoed into the night as someone or something made its way into the clearing. The fox jerked his head in the direction of the snaps and smiled, exposing several tiny sharp teeth. A sly expression came to his face. The twins couldn't tell if it was because he was pleased or just because he was a fox. Three cloaked figures stepped into the clearing. They were all different shapes and sizes. One was enormous, another was only a little bigger than the twins, and the third was as tiny as the fox. A large raven swooped into the clearing, perching on the well next to the fox. It didn't need a cloak. Its dark feathers were enough to camouflage it in the night. The others surrounded the well, all facing the fox. The fox rubbed his small paws together.
"So glad you all could make it," the fox said through his toothy grin.
The smallest of the cloaked figures lowered its hood. He had shiny black eyes, white stripes, and a short snout. It was a badger, and a paranoid one at that.
"It isn't safe for us to be out at a night like this," the badger said, and nervously looked around. "At least not anymore."
"Relax, badger," the fox said. "If the enchantress wanted to harm us, we would be dead by now."
"Get to the point, fox," the raven squawked impatiently. "Why did you call us here tonight?"
The largest figure lowered its hood. It was a gigantic brown bear.
"And make it fast. I've got cubs at home,"
the bear said with a booming and growly voice. Alex and Connor had never seen so many talking animals in the same place. They hoped their presence would remain unnoticed.
"I've just returned from the Eastern Kingdom," the fox said. "I heard the enchantress did a number on it, but I wanted to see it with my own two eyes. The whole place is a disaster. It's covered in vines and thorn bushes as far as the eye can see. It's worse than I ever imagined. It's as if the thorn bush pit has taken over the entire kingdom."
"Oh, dear,"
the badger squealed and began nervously tapping his paws together.
"Is it going to cross into other kingdoms?"
"I hate thorns,"
the raven said.
"That's the thing," the fox explained. "The plants grow perfectly along the border. They don't cross into the northern kingdom at all. I even tried provoking a plant with a stick, but it only coiled around the edge that touched Eastern Kingdom ground. It takes very powerful magic to be that specific."
The animals exchanged worried expressions. The remaining hooded member of the group maintained his silence. Alex and Connor wondered what kind of creature was under the cloak.
"Why would the plants only stay in one kingdom?" the bear asked.
"I reckon the enchantress is taking over the world in style," the fox said. "She's doing it one kingdom at a time, showing the world that the happily ever after symbol is no match for her. It's only a matter of time before she takes over the dwarf forest, too, and we must be prepared."
"But what would she want with the dwarf forest?"
the badger asked, shaking his head. It's full of nothing but criminals and outcasts like us.
The fox's grin grew bigger.
Exactly why I called you all here tonight, he said. I think we should pledge our allegiance to the Enchantress now, before she strikes.
The animals grunted and growled their protest.
You're out of your rabbit-praying mind, Fox, the bear said.
We're already fugitives, the raven said. You want us to get locked away in Pinocchio prison next?
The fox raised his paws at them, calming their nerves.
Hear me out before you disregard me entirely, he said. Think about it. The reason we live in these parts is because none of us could fit in a happily ever after assembly regulated society. The Enchantress is going to change all that. The world of fairies and man is over. If we show loyalty to her now, then when she takes over, and she will take over, she may spare us.
The fox was slowly starting to convince the animals. They all remained quiet except the badger.
We can't do that, the badger said. It's already bad enough living in exile. Can you imagine what they'd do to us if we sided with her?
That's where you're mistaken, badger, the fox said. You're still in the happily ever after frame of mind. I saw what the Enchantress is capable of. Trust me, all the fairies in the world aren't going to be able to stop her this time. If they could, they would have done so already.
The animals looked back and forth to one another. All were afraid to be the first to express their interest.
How would we show our allegiance? The bear asked.
You're not agreeing with him, are you?
The badger asked the bear. The bear growled restlessly.
We're already castaways. What more can they do to us?
He said.
If the world is changing, why not change with it? Especially if there's something in it for us.
The raven bobbed up and down, contemplating.
What's your plan, Fox?
She asked.
I've been asking around. I've got some ideas, the fox said.
His mouth had dropped the smile, but his eyes hadn't.
What about you?
The raven squawked, in the direction of the unidentified creature.
You've been awfully quiet.
He's always quiet,
the bear said.
I don't even know if he can speak.
The hooded creature looked around at his fellow animals and nodded his head. A simple and singular ribbit came from under his hood. Alex and Connor both gasped. Could it be? The badger must have heard the twins' reaction, because he grew more timid than ever.
We should get out of here before we get caught.
Think it over, the fox said. You all know where to find me.
All of the animals put their hoods back over their heads and disappeared into the night. The fox took one last look around the forest before following the others. Perhaps the badger's paranoia had gotten to him. The twins knew they wanted to follow the mysterious hooded creature. They made sure the other animals were a safe distance away, then bolted through the forest after their new target. The forest became darker and darker as they went. The twins had been running for a few minutes, jumping over boulders and tree roots. They were cold, tired, and lost. It was almost nostalgic for them, reminding them of their last trip, but there was no sign of the hooded creature.
I don't get it, Alex said. He was just here.
It's like he disappeared into thin-
Ah!
Connor screamed. Alex turned to see what had startled her brother. Emerging from the trees directly behind them was the hooded creature. He was much taller and more menacing than he looked in the clearing. He began slowly walking toward the twins. They clutched each other in fear.
We're sorry for following you, Connor said. We thought we might have known you.
We didn't mean any harm, Alex said. We'll leave you alone now.
The creature kept coming toward them.
You better get away from us, Connor said, taking another approach. My sister knows magic. She'd just sink a house. She'll mess you up.
Alex stared at her brother in disbelief. Did he think this was helpful? The creature froze just a few feet away from them and looked the twins up and down and side to side. Connor picked up a big stick on the ground and began swinging it in the hooded creature's direction.
I play t-ball in elementary school, he said. I'm warning you.
A soft chuckle came from under the creature's cloak.
Come now, is that really how you're going to greet an old friend?
Said a very familiar and proper voice. Its owner slowly removed its hood, and the twins sighed with relief.
Froggy!
The twins exclaimed. They jumped into a huge hug, violently embracing their old friend.
Hello, Connor. Hello, Alex, Froggy said, and hugged them back. I wish I could say it's a surprise seeing you two here, but you've always had a knack for being in danger.
Froggy was a tall, man-sized frog with big bright eyes and a wide mouth. He always dressed to impress. The twins noticed he was wearing a three-piece suit under his cloak.
It's so good to see you, Froggy, Connor said. We've missed you so much, Alex said.
And I've missed you, Froggy said,
as he leaned down to look them both in the eye.
You've both grown so much. You're practically grown-ups.
His expression fell once he remembered where this reunion was taking place.
What on earth are you two doing here at a time like this? Does your grandmother know where you are?
Alex and Connor exchanged guilty glances at each other.
Not really, Connor said.
Grandma doesn't know exactly where we are, Alex said, not looking him in the eye.
I should certainly hope not, Froggy said. The dwarf forests are still too dangerous for you to be in, especially these days, and especially this late.
Alex and Connor gave each other another glance.
I recognize that look, Froggy said.
What aren't you telling me? And why are you both so filthy?
Alex and Connor considered lying to him for a second, but they knew they couldn't.
Our grandma doesn't know we're in this world,
Alex confessed. Froggy's wide mouth fell open, and he stared blankly at the twins.
How did you get here?
Alex sank our grandma's house. I wasn't kidding, Connor said. That's why we're covered in swamp juice.
It was horrifying and strangely awesome at the same time. You sank a house?
Froggy asked, dumbfounded.
You know, normally I would question such a possibility, but I don't with you two.
It was an accident, Alex said. I activated another one of my grandma's portals.
Your technique needs work, Connor said, out of the side of his mouth.
Froggy looked around at the forest. They could tell knowing they had snuck into the fairy tale world made him uneasy.
Children, you shouldn't be here, he said. These are very dangerous times. An evil enchantress is at large.
Esmia, Alex said. We know all about her. She's kidnapped our mom.
What? Froggy said. I'm so sorry.
Not as sorry as we are, Connor said. And our grandma practically imprisoned us trying to stop us from coming here.
Clearly it worked, Froggy said with an eye roll.
Has she met you two? Are you even capable of sitting still?
Thank you, Connor said, glad of the validation.
Wait, Alex said, noticing something for the first time. Froggy, you're a frog again.
Oh yeah, Connor said. What gives?
Despite his transformation back into Prince Charlie, the long-lost charming prince, Alex and Connor still imagined him as a frog whenever they thought of him. They had to remind themselves it wasn't his natural form.
I'm undercover, Froggy said. Your grandmother transformed me back into a frog so I could keep a watch over the animals and criminals living in the dwarf forest during this crisis. We figured they'd trust me more as an amphibian. Some of them even remember me from when I was living here.
Are they really going to join the Enchantress? Alex asked.
I doubt it, Froggy said. These are just a bunch of crooks trying to make the current situation work for them. I wouldn't worry too much about it. But still, the Happily Ever After Assembly wants to keep an eye on them just in case things change.
Froggy folded his arms and looked between the twins.
I'm sure they'd be much more interested in knowing what you two are up to.
Froggy, you can't tell anyone we're here, Connor said. They'll send us back.
We can't be stuck at home, not when we know our mom is in danger, Alex said.
They both looked up at him with large, pleading eyes.
Children, you know I care about you deeply, but...
Froggy started, but was interrupted.
We're not children, Connor shouted. Everyone keeps calling us that, and I'm sick of it. We shouldn't have to prove ourselves after everything we've been through already. It's not like we're a couple of irresponsible kids sneaking into a party. We're two young adults trying to save our mother's life.
You can tell our grandmother if you have to, Alex said. She can lock us up at home all she wants, but we'll just keep finding ways to get back here until our mom is safe.
We have to find her, Froggy, Connor said. We already lost her dad. We can't lose our mom. We're not going to stop until we save her.
Froggy hopelessly looked back and forth between them with his big, glossy eyes. They'd put him between a rock and a hard place.
First things first, Froggy said. We need to get you out of the dwarf forest before anything else sees you. Let's get somewhere safe, and we'll discuss it further.
Alex and Connor nodded, but they already knew there wouldn't be anything to discuss. His loyalty to them was much stronger than it was to their grandmother. He was their friend before he was her subject. Froggy placed his cloak over the twins and led them safely through the forest. Alex and Connor were so relieved to have miraculously made contact with an ally so soon, but they knew the worst was yet to come in the uncertain days ahead. Chapter 10. Rumpelstiltskin's Debt. Pinocchio Prison was home to the most dangerous criminals in all the kingdoms. It was a tall, dark fortress that sat in the center of a long peninsula that curved around Mermaid Bay in the southern part of the Eastern Kingdom.
It was perched at the top of a high and rocky cliff, with sharp spikes pointing inward and outward at every window, so there was no possible way to escape or of unauthorized entry. Enchanted wooden soldiers patrolled the narrow stone.